show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, we have some undefeated Cactus League baseball to talk about with the Kansas City Royals. But before we jump into that, of course, we have our introductions. I am Jeff Hearn. With me, as always, the man who is forever undefeated, Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this? It's just an evening at this point. There's no crazy weather. It's not super hot. It's not cold. It's just kind of nice. It's just there.
It's not too bad. It's been a calm week. You know, able to listen to some baseball at work in the afternoons. That's always good. Got the new At Bat app. It has a cool little picture-in-picture thing. So if you use the At Bat app, it allows you to. I mean, they're, you know, not to sponsor them or anything, but they have a little picture-in-picture so you can keep tweeting on your phone, and the actual image of a game is still right there. So that's kind of cool. So yeah, pretty solid week through a Wednesday. So I can't complain.
Yeah, and it's pretty it's refreshing. It gets that feeling. You know, we got that baseball actually being played. There are games that are happening every day, folks, and starting to hear more and more things. And as we get, you know, further into spring training and everything, they, you know, normally you pretty much everything would be done, but we just had Logan Morrison just signed with the Twins just this week, and then Mike Moustakas still hasn't signed, and then. So, you know, as we get closer into spring training or closer to the end of spring training, maybe there'll be some injuries. Maybe people will realize that players aren't who they thought they were. And so I'm sure Mike Moustakas will get signed at one point. But as we talked about last week, Eric Hosmer, of course, having signed elsewhere, left somewhat of an opening on the Royals roster. They had potential pieces to fit it in, but of course nothing that was concrete. But the Royals decided they didn't like that situation, so what they went out and did was sign Lucas Duda as a free agent to a one-year, $3.5 million contract, which in terms of baseball money is absolutely nothing, and a fantastic contract for someone who hit 30 home runs last year and has had pretty good power numbers in his past. But you, as Royals fans, we may remember Lucas Duda the most from being the unfortunate man who will be immortalized in Royals history, and honestly as one of the more exciting moments in baseball, for a you know, World Series game late in the game, big time game tying play here. Eric Hosmer's mad dash to home, Lucas Duda's bad throw allowing him to score, and the rest, as we know, is quite literally history. But now he's a Royal, so it'll be kind of interesting because every time that clip is played as, say, some sort of a pump-up thing, you know, whether it's on, you know, a commercial or whether it's before a game or whatever it may be, I mean, that'll be him up there. But he's in a Royals uniform now. And he is replacing who stashed home, and it's all right there. That is now the nexus of the Royals' first base universe right there, that single play, so much of it defining so much. But Lucas Duda is now Royal. So he's coming off a year where he didn't hit spectacularly well for average, but he's a good on-base guy. He slugged incredibly well. He had an 818 OPS coming off a 217 batting average. So that tells you that he was doing something pretty well, which is hit for power. He had 30 home runs and 28 doubles, but he only had 92 hits. Yep. So I heard something interesting on the radio this morning that he is – that's only the fourth season in Major League Baseball history in which somebody has had 30 or more home runs and less than 100 hits. And two of the other three times are Mark McGwire, which makes sense. But anyway, so Duda is coming off a, you know, not the best year. That batting average makes you kind of hesitate a little bit, but the good on-base skills, the power – it's all there, and it's going to provide the Royals with a very a solid, dependable option at first base. So they know opening day, that's our guy. He's going to play first base, and they don't have to worry about that anymore. So I don't know if the Royals just – you know, what they had seen so far in the week of spring training, that the players that were vying for that position, you know, whether it's Hunter Dozier or whoever else, just weren't cutting it defensively or what the situation was, but they decided they needed to move forward, and they went out and got Lucas Duda. Apparently they actually offered Logan Morrison. The details of that offer aren't exactly explicit, but he signed for, was it, $6.5 million?
It was like there's $5.5 million for 1 year, but there's I think there's incentives that can bump it up, plus there's like a vesting option for next year. So I mean, there is a lot going into it, that it's not just like a base $5.5 million. It's you know, definitely something that's going to be it's probably going to turn into a 2 year deal. So
right,
you know, it's which, just officially it's guaranteed to be one.
And it's kind of funny because, you know, the when the whole Hosmer situation was still going on and still active, the news, quote unquote, came out that Logan Morrison would love to play for the Royals, his hometown team, you know, as a Kansas City guy. And I don't know if it was necessarily as strong as love to play for the Royals, but that was something that he would be interested in doing. And then apparently the Royals offered him a contract, and then he said no because he wanted to win right away. And so he went and signed with the Twins. So, you know, I totally get – I get all of those things that happened, but just the way they happened all right together doesn't make a ton of sense. Hey, I'd love to play for the Royals, which if you let that rumor get out there, it's because you want them to make you an offer. They do, and then you decline it. I mean, maybe at the point that he said that, there was no offer for him from anywhere, and then all of a sudden things started coming in. I don't know. But and nothing against Logan Morrison. I just thought it was kind of funny how that all played out. But he's on the Twins, so the Royals will see him quite a bit this year. And that's just kind of adding a little bit more power to the Twins' very young roster. So I don't know that
good
I'm still a huge believer in the Twins. I guess, I mean, last it's hard to, you know, they made it happen last year, and we didn't believe them the whole year, and they still made it happen. So I'm probably wrong, but we'll see. Anyway, Royals have Lucas Duda now. And, I mean, what was your thought when you first hear it? I mean, if it's me, a one-year deal for $3.5 million, you absolutely cannot find anything wrong with that, unless it is objectively the worst player in baseball.
Right. I mean, they paid Alcides Escobar $2.5 million, and he's one of the worst hitters in baseball. Duda, yeah, he offers some power, so I think that's good. $3.5 million is really nothing to worry about. The Royals say they don't need to make any move to offset that money, so I guess that's good for them. You know, it kind of popped up in my Twitter feed, and I was like, oh, okay. Sure. Like, totally fine with it. I'm not, like, jumping up and down for joy or anything, but, you know, he's, for that kind of money, the power he'll bring, I think that's going to be pretty good for the lineup. They actually have, like, a couple of legitimate major league hitters now, whereas starting spring training, they didn't. They had a lot of question marks, so that's one question that's answered. I don't think it's so much of like not trusting someone like Hunter Dozier, who started, you know, the first couple games playing at first. You know, he'd only really played 12 games in the minor leagues at first base. So it's not as if, you know, he's had his eye on first base and was waiting for Hosmer to move. It's more or less that, you know, he's played in the outfield in the past. He's played at third base in the past. And first base isn't opening. And so they gave him an opportunity while they were looking at other options. You know, I don't know. I mean, he'll stay in camp for a while. But, you know, he's probably the odd man out in a lot of those battles. Duda should be playing about every day. Maybe they'll platoon him a bit with other players. He has had some pretty significant splits comparing his batting against lefties and batting against righties last year. He was a lot better against righties, and he's a left-handed hitter, so that makes sense. You know, it's a perfectly fine signing, and as Craig Brown wrote earlier, actually it posted Wednesday morning a few hours before Duda signed, the Royals lineup is very right-hand heavy. They have a couple of switch hitters that might be in the mix, but they're like Ramon Torres and Raul Adalberto Mondesi. You know, so it's not like those guys are really going to break up the lineup that much. The only lefty they really had was Alex Gordon. So Duda kind of, you know, diversifies that lineup a bit, whereas before it was eight righties and one lefty. So, you know, it seems like the Royals were, you know, once they missed out on Hosmer, they made an offer to Morrison. Obviously, they made an offer to Duda. So I think they just kind of wanted to get that kind of everyday guy there and have him, you know, ready to go. And, yeah, I mean, like you said, it's kind of weird that Duda has got this place in Royals history already. The funny thing back in 2015 was when some of the, like, the reports and some of the stories about that came out, it was one of the things when they were talking about that play where Hosmer scored and Duda's throw went wide was Rusty Koontz had said, they asked him about the throw, and he's base running coach, so I mean they're going to go over in fielder's arms, and they asked him about Duda, and he said, bless his heart, Duda, he's a great bat. And that ended up getting back to Duda, and there's a story shortly after the World Series where he was kind of irked about that, and I get it. Apparently they spoke today, not necessarily about that particular comment, but they spoke and things seem all right, and you know, it could have been an awkward situation. It may not be. Though it is kind of funny. One of the pictures in the Kansas City Star is he's standing in one of the hallways in surprise right by a framed photo of Sal Perez on the cover of Sports Illustrated with the World Series trophy. So it's like it's, you know, it's always going to be a part of it. But, yeah, perfectly fine signing. You know, kind of interesting to see if he can throw 30 homers out there.
Yeah, that $3.5 million goes a long way towards making it less awkward with Rusty Koontz. But, yeah, it will be interesting to see if he can still have that kind of pop in Kauffman.
Yeah, and if he stays healthy, I think he's got a good shot at it. You know, I think he only played like 120 games last year or something like that. Yeah, I mean, it's totally fine. I think it's going to be interesting. He's kind of like Brandon Moss. You know, lefty, strikes out, has a lot of power, will draw a walk, a heavy platoon split. You know, it's, you know, hopefully it goes a little better than it did with Brandon Moss, who had a really, really streaky year, and most of them were bad streaks. Duda kind of gets things going, you know. He could legitimately be like a 250, 30 home run guy. Right in the middle of the lineup. So it kind of, I think it helps everybody. It takes some pressure off some of the younger players who might be able to, you know, hit higher or lower in the lineup and not necessarily in the middle of it. So it'll be kind of interesting to see how they actually set him up in the lineup. But yeah, I'm pretty cool with it. I'm not too worried about Hunter Dozier. He's got time to kind of let a position sort out. We'll talk a little bit later. You know, maybe he ends up being on the bench. Maybe he's the right-handed component to a platoon at first base, and Dozier can kind of bounce around into the outfield or at third base and spell guys and whatnot. Not sure how it'll fit. You know, maybe he goes on a tear this spring and hits, and they have to find a place for him. You never know. So it's, we're five games in. A lot can still happen. They probably have about, a week to 10 days before they start really chopping some of those, some of those players that they figure will be at the big league level this year. So plenty of time to kind of see how it'll shake out and get a feel for how they're going to balance playing time among those guys. But yeah, I'm cool with Duda, especially at $3.5 million. There's, you know, they say there's no such thing as a bad one-year deal, and a one-year deal for $3.5 million is, you know, you can spend $3.5 million and get 30 homers. It's a pretty good investment.
Yeah, and apparently I just heard this on the radio that this is what they had asked him. They said, did you ever imagine that there'd be, you know, that the offseason would get to the point where somebody after coming off a 30 home run season would sign a 1 year contract for $3.5 million? And they asked this to Duda, and his response was more or less, it is what it is type of a thing. So that's, you know, the Royals are, just a few years ago, you know, you would have thought he would have cost somewhere, you know, 10 plus million on a 1 year contract, at least coming off 30 home runs. And, you know, he'll be 32. If he's not already,
I think he is already.
Yeah. 32. Yeah. Just turned 32 last month. So he's 32 and it's not that old. So especially for a 1 year contract. So yeah, I am exactly in step with you in terms of how okay I am with this deal, if you will. But, you know, some of the things that get kind of thrown into it, and you alluded to the situation with the other players and how this impacts things. And, you know, we had talked about at the very top of the show, Hunter Dozier possibly being that first base guy. But, you know, that's obviously at least not in the immediate future for the next year. So what's going to happen with Hunter Dozier is kind of the question, because the idea was Hunter Dozier would play first and Chester Cuthbert would play third, even though that was the position that Dozier was drafted at. And then both of them would see the field, they get at bats, and you could kind of figure out, okay, what do we have with these two players? And so then the question is, okay, well, who do you want between Dozier and Cuthbert? So do you move Dozier over to third and then you put Cuthbert? What do you do with Cuthbert? Well, he doesn't have any options left. So your only option is to keep him at third to start the season at the very least, see what you got, and then take Dozier, who does have some options, and put him down in AAA so he can at least get bats every day. Because unless you're putting him at DH or something, somewhere where he can get at bats every day at the major league level, you're just – You're hurting him more than anything. And between, you know, your Paolo Orlando, Jorge Bonifacio, Jorge Soler, and then the kind of rotating DH angle they wanted to take last year, you know, with Salvador Perez to get him more days off and more innings off, you have to kind of there's not really a room for him to just be DH every day until the spot frees up in the field. So he's probably going to start season in AAA. So that's kind of an interesting little wrinkle there, and I don't know that the anticipation was that Dozier would be, you know, super integral to the team this year, but it was at least interesting to think, okay, well, we're going to see what we have with him. We're going to see what the Royals have and what he brings to the table. And both he and Cuthbert. So now we're going to have to wait a little bit longer for that, I suppose, at least on Dozier's end, but we'll have a good idea of what Cuthbert brings. So yeah, I think that'll be an interesting dynamic there with those guys and how that all plays out. I mean, what are your thoughts? You obviously are okay with the contract itself, but in terms of what that means for the Dozier-Cuthbert situation, are you cool with how that's going to play out if it does play out the way I suggested?
Yeah, and you make a good point with Dozier that, you know, it doesn't do a lot of good for him to be on the bench. You know, they still want to see what he can do. In 2016, he had a good season. Last year, he had a lot of different injuries that came up. So didn't really get much of an opportunity to show much of anything. And, you know, so the Royals are kind of in the dark there. It doesn't do a whole lot of good to continue that by putting him on the bench. So if he goes to Omaha and plays every day, that's best for him and probably ultimately best for the Royals. They're kind of helped out because they also have an idea of what Cuthbert can do. As we've, you know, kind of mentioned various points over the last couple of years. You know, in 2016, he filled in admirably for Mike Moustakas when he went down and looked every bit the part of a guy who could hang at this level. And, you know, last year he had some injuries and some slumps of his own. But this year going in, you know, I've kind of jotted down like a list of like guys who are basically locks for positions. And Cuthbert's not necessarily a lock there, but like they don't have, you know, short of signing Mike Moustakas to come back, they don't have a set locked guy there to displace Cuthbert. So, you know, it's more or less his job to lose this spring. And, you know, I don't anticipate that happening. Even if he has a rough spring, I think they still believe in what he can do. And another thing that you've brought up is that Cuthbert is out of options. So, you know, if they do need to send one of those two to Omaha, if they were to try to send Cuthbert to Omaha, they'd have to expose him to waivers and for other teams who could possibly pick him up. And, you know, this time of the year, a lot of those decisions end up happening because, you know, a guy doesn't have options. And a team like the Royals, they want to keep inventory on their roster. They want to keep guys around. They want to have them available. And so some of the guys that may have a good shot at being on a big league club might end up going to the minors simply because they have options to send them there. And there's a similar player that wins out because they couldn't be exposed to waivers. You know, like the Royals wanted to keep Chesler Cuthbert, you know, that's going to be what rides their decision. And if that means that Hunter Dozier gets sent to the minor leagues, well, you know, there you go. You compare that to somebody like Jorge Bonifacio, who played really well last year. He does have an option, and I suppose if it really came down to it, they could use that option to send him to Omaha if it meant fitting somebody else there. But I think he fits enough into their plans that they're not going to worry about that option, and maybe that's something that they just, you know, don't even think about because they figure that he's going to be in right field. And so, like, for those two guys, the roster math and the construction is kind of interesting, at least Cuthbert and Bonifacio, because the options are really in play with Cuthbert, even though I think he's probably safe to make the team unless things go really badly. And Bonifacio, they really seem to be, you know, high on and confident in what he can do. And so even though he has an option, someone would really, really have to light it on fire to overtake him. So, you know, how that kind of plays into Dozier is somebody who could play corner outfield or third base. It puts him on the wrong side of it in basically every position because all the spots he could take, first base, they just signed Duda, left field, Alex Gordon, right field, Jorge Bonifacio, third base, Chesler Cuthbert, even DH. Like you said, they want to try that rolling DH, and this is the year. This is the year they're going to do it. Finally going to do it. But even then, this year, they've got Jorge Soler, and they, you know, Soler is also out of options. So, you know, it comes into the same thing where, you know, if Dozier and Soler are hitting exactly the same, or even if Soler is hitting worse, if they wanted to drop Soler, they would have to expose him so that other teams could potentially pick him up. So Dozier's kind of behind it in every possible way, and that's going to end up where, yeah, he, unless somebody gets hurt, he's probably going to be starting the year in Omaha, which, you know, is not a bad thing. I mean, it kind of stinks that he was looking like maybe he'd be an opening day first baseman if he played well, but now at least he'll get to go to Omaha and, you know, actually get the time to kind of work on things and work at first base and put in more time in the outfield and get everyday at bats and kind of see what he can do. And then if it turns out that there's an injury in the middle of the season or if he's hitting just particularly well, well, then they can make that change once the season starts. So, you know, even if he's in Omaha, it doesn't mean that he's stuck there all year. And that's kind of – spring training always kind of brings that out because you feel like, okay, who's going to make the team? And that's the most important thing. But, like, you know, teams will use a lot of players throughout the year. Guys get hurt. Guys are ineffective and they get cut. Guys get traded, whatever, you know. Roster changes throughout the year, so anybody who gets sent to Omaha still has the potential to come back as long as the you know they're not someone who's gets waived and ends up you know getting picked up by another team. So for Dozier's sake, you know he's not in a bad spot. He's just not in like the best opportunity yet. So he's going to have to you know put in some work, and if that means that he puts in the work this year and takes over next year, well, then, you know, that's what we'll be talking about in 12 months, about Hunter Dozier's succeeding Lucas Duda. So, you know, a lot going on, a lot of roster math, a lot of roster manipulation, all kind of points to Dozier ending up in Omaha.
And there was even a clip I heard on the radio this morning about how Dayton Moore even kind of alluded to exactly what you're talking about, where, you know, the fluidity of rosters in baseball, where he specifically said that, because people brought up, you know, oh, well, does this mean Dozier could start in AAA? What, you know, what's the deal with that? And it wasn't something where Dayton Moore said that that's what was going to happen, but he did, you know, acknowledge the possibility and said that that's, you know, he said sometimes it wasn't a specific anecdote about a player, but almost in an anecdotal way, he brought up how, you know, some players don't necessarily do well in that first opening day, kind of first month or two of the season, where he said there's more energy around it, everyone's more amped up, etc. So it's sometimes more difficult for players to break in and get their first kind of taste of the big leagues, if you will, in that atmosphere. And so he prefers to bring people up in June and July time frame, which sounds more like a convenient excuse to kind of game the playing time system or surface time system.
than
it does any true reason, but it's at least, you know, something to consider. And that's kind of been the MO for the Royals, really. If you look at even when everyone came up, that 2011-2012 time frame, that's kind of the way it was played. Mm-hmm. Not many started the season with the squad. It was either kind of, you know, mid-season or late in the season they were brought up. And the kind of one recent memory we have of someone who didn't do that was Raul Mondesi, who, side note, will now be going back to being Adalberto Mondesi, which I think we even said that we wished he would at some point on the show.
Yeah, it's a fun name.
It's very fun, and I'm very happy to see it happen. So he has decided that he would like to go back to being referred to as Adalberto Mondesi. So that's how we will refer to him going forward. So
we'll try.
I did that on purpose so that we could bring in the transition. But believe me or not, but the Adalberto Mondesi, he started the season last year with the Royals right from the start. He had a very small taste the previous year, and then did well enough in spring training. They decided he was the guy, and so they started him to start the season, and he just did incredibly poorly, as we've discussed a lot on the show. And so, unfortunately, you know, it didn't work out for him. And if you're looking at recent Royals history and you're Dayton Moore, these things are going to stick out. Hosmer, Moose, Perez, Salvi, Duffy, all those guys were brought up, you know, after, you know, a couple months into the season. Hosmer being the earliest in May. Duffy came the end of that month in the same at the end of May in that same year, and then Moose was about a month later, and then Salvi was I can't remember exactly when he came up.
It was in August.
But August, okay, yeah.
Like middle of August.
Yeah, after those injuries kind of in the same week to Brian Pena and who was it? Was it
Matt Trainer got concussed and was out for the year.
Trainer, that's
and Pena went on paternity leave, which meant that Manny Pena had been called up to fill in for Trainer. And then when Brian Pena left for paternity leave, Sal Perez came up, and then it was his job since. Which is it's one of the funner like transaction days that I recall.
Yeah.
It was just all this weird flurry of stuff. But anyway, yeah. Yeah, much later into the
year. He came up later. So if you have all those success stories that you've seen coming up later, and then you've got Mondesi, who you started from day one, and he kind of blew up in your face, then I could see why you'd have that attitude if you're Dayton Moore. Or not attitude, but that philosophy if you're Dayton Moore, beyond just trying to game the service time system. So that'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. And to see, we will see Hunter Dozier this year. I'm very confident of that. So it'll be really interesting to see when exactly that happens, when that takes place. You know, if Jorge Soler and or Jorge Bonifacio doesn't perform and really struggles, then maybe one of them could be released. Probably not Jorge Soler. I think the Royals are pretty invested in him. But you know, we'll see how that all plays out, but it will be interesting. And that can kind of bring us to our next point of our next topic of discussion as we try and fit all the pieces together of where all these things are going to go. Let's do a rundown of kind of who has options left and who doesn't, what do we think we know about how this roster is going to shake out on opening day. I mean, I think there are some givens here that mm-hmm. everyone knows. Obviously, Duda now is going to be at first base. Obviously, Sal Perez is going to be at catcher. Alex Gordon is going to be in the outfield somewhere. Alcides Escobar is going to be playing short. And Whit Merrifield is going to be somewhere, whether that's second base or whether that's in the outfield. He'll be somewhere. And at least we'll stick to position players for now mm-hmm. for this immediate point in time. But I think as far as position players are concerned, I think that's those are the only really certainties that we have. Am I missing something? I mean, I think we're going to see Jorge Bonifacio and Soler. Oh, yeah, as a backup. Yeah,
which, I mean, he's got it. I mean, they're really comfortable with him as a backup. If for some reason they weren't, Cam Gallagher is a perfectly capable backup as well. So they're in good shape there. But Butera is, the veteran. He's been there for the last couple of years. So he's in good shape to kind of be there. But, yeah, it's really those kind of like those five are like the only surefire locks that barring injury, they're going to be somewhere. You know, Merrifield, who knows? He's, he'll probably still be at second, but you never know. But those are the only guys. But I think as you were starting to say, Bonifacio is as close to that based on what he did last year as I think you can get to being a lock. It's going to have to take an injury or a strong, kind of performance by somebody else to overtake him. So he's pretty much there. Soler is out of options. They have a lot invested in him, even if the payroll isn't exactly a lot, given that they traded Wade Davis for him. And, no matter what, teams will usually try to cling to those guys to see if they can get something from him. Plus, he's in the best shape of his life, trademark. Hit two homers yesterday. One of them was tracked at 480 feet, which, okay, that Arizona is what it is, but 480 is 480. So,
takes quite a bit to get it out there.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to have every opportunity to be in there as many times as he can. So position-wise, like, those are really the only solid locks that I can think of. There's a lot of stuff up in the air with I would say Cuthbert's close to that level. He should be feel pretty safe, especially with, you know, what we just talked about with Dozier and everything else. But, you know, the bench spots, you don't know. There's a couple of guys vying for those. Center field is still kind of a question. You know, there's kind of a lot of stuff going on and a number of guys who are on the 40-man roster and also non-roster invitees who are playing for those spots. So, a lot of kind of stuff up in the air still that I don't know if we're going to have an answer anytime before, you know, maybe a week before the season starts.
Yeah, and it's a lot of those guys you mentioned. I think you're right in that they're kind of, I guess you could say, a step below those those five guys we mentioned that we'll see somewhere. That we're in all likelihood, unless something crazy happens, we'll see Cuthbert, Bonifacio, Soler on the opening day roster. With them, it's more just a question of where we're going to see them. So, you know, who knows where they'll be. I mean, like you said, center field is up, and I think that's kind of the big linchpin there is center field. So if you were the Royals, I think what you want to happen is Mondesi, again, does well enough in spring training that you're okay with him starting the season at second again. And then you can take Merrifield and move to center field, where, I mean, he played center field in college, and he actually moved from center field to second base because Jackie Bradley Jr. was recruited after him. So that's, you know, he was a center fielder. He knows kind of the how to play, if you will. And so then you can kind of, you can get those two positions done, and then you can put Bonifacio or Soler in right field and then have one of the other rotate into DH or whatever the case may be, as needed. And then things kind of fall into place from there. But if you don't have, you know, if you don't have center field figured out and Mondesi doesn't play well enough to start second, to start at second for the, to, at the beginning of the season, which, to be honest, I'd rather the Royals just don't start the season with him. Just kind of let him just mellow out in AAA for a little bit this season. You know, I think that there was a lot that they put on Mondesi, and he was kind of rushed through the system a little bit faster than he needed to be. So pumping the brakes a little
bit. At like every level.
Yeah. I mean, as soon as he showed that he was starting to grasp a level, you know, normally your prospect, you come up, if you're really, really good, you just succeed right away, but you might struggle a little bit, then you kind of start showing that, okay, I understand, I belong, and then you kind of plateau at a point where, okay, I'm too good for this level now, I have to move up. You know, that's the ideal for prospect moving through the system, but you know, as soon as he showed, like, oh, okay, he's starting to get the hang of it, he can compete at this level, then they just moved him to the next. So they kind of skipped a mini step in there. And there's no written set of rules or anything in terms of how you have to bring a prospect through the system. But regardless, this is where we're at now. So I think it'd be great if they could just, you know, give him a little bit more time at AAA. Let that just kind of ease him in. But then that does bring up the question of what are they going to do in center field then? Because you're going to put Merrifield at second base if that's what's happening. And then your center field options, you've got Paolo Orlando, who, you know, I mean, he is what he is. He's a fine player. He's not an everyday major leaguer. He can do it for short stints. He's shown us that. He's got some things that he does really well. But he's probably not an everyday caliber major league player. And you've got Jorge Bonifacio and Soler, neither of which appear to be all that equipped to play center field. I don't know if the Royals want them anywhere yet.
No.
So you've got Alex Gordon, who probably could do it just because he could probably do anything if he really wanted to. But then you've got – then you're just moving the hole from center field to left field, which I guess is easier to fill. But, you know, it's still just – you know, you don't really net yourself much of an advantage there.
You're not really solving a problem.
One kind of, exactly. You're just kind of moving it. And the interesting wrinkle in all this is talking about Bubba Starling. So, you know, he's still – I don't know that he's shown enough overall still to have anybody get all that excited about him as a player. You know, not like when he was drafted. But, you know, it may be something where the Royals just say – I mean, he's always – defensively, he's always – he kind of feels like in a different way, like how they talked about Salvador Perez before Perez came up, because when Perez was in double A, it was, oh, he's ready defensively. He just needs to get his offense – his offensive capabilities ready to be at the major league level. And, you know, he was still doing at the – in the minors, he was still doing better offensively than Starling has. But that's kind of the same line on Starling is defensively, he's got that ability to play center field at a very high level in the major leagues, but you know, the offense is going to hold him back.
Yeah.
But it may be that the Royals are at a point that they would just say, you know what, we'll just put him at the bottom of the order, hope maybe we get lucky and he figures something out, and we'll just have him start and just, you know, get some defense, because maybe what Starling can do defensively will provide more value to help the pitching staff then, you know, that will make up for a lot of the value that you lose with him offensively. So, I don't know. You know, at this point, it almost seems worth it to me to just, what the hell? You know, let's see what we got. If he's going to do anything, he's going to do it, you know.
Yeah, he's going to have like to do it.
Being in the minors is going to help him all of a sudden click, you know, it just, so... I don't know. How do you, when you think of the outfield situation, what's your ideal, and what do you think is going to happen?
Well, I think Bonifacio's got right field, even though I wouldn't call him a lock yet. I mean, it's the basic thing. I would not try to move Gordon from left if I could help it. Not that I don't think he can play center field. I just don't know that the net that you get by placing someone who's rough in left field helps you out that much. So I think it's just, that's pretty scary. Bonifacio improved as the year got on in right field. I wouldn't say that he's like a good defender, but he's fine. He's got a good arm. His instincts seem to get better as kind of the game kind of slowed down for him. So Lair, I just don't know if the defense is ever going to be there. So I'm just worried about as much, you know, how much outfield he might play. I guess the ideal would be just what you said, that Bubba Starling does enough this spring to jump in there and take it. I mean, it's the, probably the best opportunity he has right now is to just outplay Paulo Orlando. Unfortunately, Orlando is hitting like 700 and has four doubles already in four games. So that's a good start for him.
So do you like that option? Sorry to interrupt. I just wanted. Do you like that option because it would mean Mondesi goes and starts the season in the minors?
Yeah, and I think that I think that's best for Mondesi too. Just to give him the opportunity to hang out there. You know, the Twins kind of did something similar with Byron Buxton, and that they just kind of put him ninth. Like you said, you just put him in batting ninth, let him play defense and use his speed when he does get on base and hope that it kind of clicks. And in the second half of the season, it did click. He was a really good hitter. He ended up hitting second and third for them a number of times as they, you know, barreled towards a wild card spot. So, you know, if that could be the blueprint for Bubba, that would be fantastic. The thing is that you have to really, like, just commit to let him do that. Because as soon as he has any kind of, you know, you almost have to be willing to let him flounder for half a season just to see how he adjusts. And it's really tough to do that to a player, I think. Especially for, like, Dayton Moore, where they just don't want to have that, you know, there's... Only so many times you can say, well, we want him to get it figured out. And I think they kind of bow to that pressure. So unless Bubba really outplays Orlando, I don't know that that's a thing, but I would default to Orlando in center. I think he can play a fine enough center field and hopefully he can hit it enough. And then you let Whit Merrifield play second base. But I wouldn't be too surprised if Mondesi continues to play well this spring and they go ahead and put him at second base on opening day and put Merrifield in center field. And that allows Orlando to be on the bench as a fourth outfielder, which is a lot more useful, a lot more, you know, it's a lot more effective role for him, which, you know, he did that in 2015 and was pretty good at it. So it puts him in a spot that he's maybe going to be able to succeed a little better. You're putting more guys, you know, I don't know. I think there's a non-zero chance they would do the Mondesi at second, Witt and center thing. I just kind of want to see them give Mondesi the time to actually do something. If he comes on like Hosmer in 2011 and he's hitting 400 in the middle of May, yeah, go ahead, bring him up, see what happens. You know, if he gets to that point where he's comfortable, you go for it. You know, maybe that's the light switch that needs to flip on. But going back to the same thing about Dozier, if it's overwhelming right away, they've already seen that Mondesi can struggle right away. Well, actually, he's been overmatched basically the whole time he's been in the majors. So it's not even like it'd be a surprise. It's, you know, it would just be more of the same. So I think if they give him time to actually mature and get things sorted out in Omaha, I think that's best. You know, not that Whit Merrifield can't play center field. I'm sure he'd be able to do it capably. But I think that if your options are Whit at second, Paulo in center, I think that's maybe a little better for everybody long term. And then if 6 weeks into the season you need to change it up, go ahead and change it up. If Bubba Starling's hitting well, go ahead and call him up. I think they're a lot better off sending some of those guys to the minors and calling them up quickly if they're showing that they're hitting in AAA versus hoping that they'll hit a big league level right off the bat and then, you know, having to send them back down, because then it just seems like that's more stunting to me. Maybe it's fine, but I kind of like to see them be a little more conventional, I guess, which I guess that's – I'm kind of surprised that I'm saying that, because I kind of want to see them just let it fly. But,
right,
you know, I think you still have something in Mondesi. I think Bubba maybe has still a small chance at breaking out one of these days. So if you can – kind of coax that out of them by giving them a chance in Omaha to really build it up, then maybe that's a good thing. I mean, look at Whit Merrifield last year. He didn't hit that great in spring, lost the job to Mondesi, went to Omaha and crushed. You know, he just hit like crazy. They called him up and he kept hitting and had, you know, maybe it's a career year, but maybe it's a start of something. And, you know, if they could get that out of Mondesi and or Starling, that puts him in a pretty good spot a couple years down the road where maybe those guys now are regular contributors finally after all this time and after all this waiting.
Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah, it would be amazing. If they can just get Kyle Zimmer on the same plan. Women business.
If only, yes. So speaking of which, we can kind of use that. Now we can transition kind of into the pitching staff in terms of looking at this roster. So similarly, we have some standards that we know. So as far as the rotation is concerned, we know we've got Danny Duffy, Ian Kennedy, and Jason Hamill, who are all going to be in that starting rotation, probably in those first three slots to start the year. And as far as the bullpen is concerned, we know Kelvin Herrera is going to be the closer. We know Brandon Maurer is going to be your setup guy. And then the rest is kind of up in the air. I mean, we have been, you know, similar to the Cuthbert, Bonifacio, Soler line, you've got that Jake Junis, Nate Karns. You know, we assume that those two are the leaders in the clubhouse, if you will, for being the filling out that rotation. And then you've got Jesse Hahn, Kevin McCarthy, Brian Flynn, guys like that who have a good shot at making the bullpen. And then we've also got to remember that, you know, the Royals selected Birch Smith and Brad Keller as Rule 5 selections. So they have to if the Royals want to keep them, they have to stay on the roster the entire year. So the Royals are either confident that they'll be pieces that they can have in the bullpen, that they can rely on, or they'll just let them go. And I can't remember exactly. They have to pay some sort of penalty, I think, and then they revert back to the team
basically
that they got them from. So, you know, for whatever, you know, whatever that's worth, we'll see. But, you know, that's kind of how it breaks down from there, at least for the pitching staff. I feel like the rotation is pretty well set. You know, we definitely know those three. Mm-hmm. You think Junis and Carnes are going to round out the five as of opening day. I mean, I feel like somebody would really have to impress to unseat either of those two.
Yeah, the only thing, like, I think Junis is pretty safe. He's in that kind of Cuthbert Bonifacio area where it's like he's not a lock because maybe something happens, but, you know, he did enough the last 2 months of the year last year that I think that he looks like he belongs. Carnes might be a question only because he's coming off of that thoracic outlet syndrome surgery, and that might be something where they try to limit his innings. Somehow they might use him out of the bullpen, maybe out of as a swingman, and maybe down the line in a month or two he's a regular part of the rotation. There is a chance they might still trade Jason Hamill, so that might make it easier for Junis and Carnes to be in there and maybe some of those other guys. But I would say that right now I would still say that, yeah, Junis and Carnes are the guys. And it's not that bad of a rotation. Yeah, I'm pretty pleased with that. If Junis is your five or Carnes is your five, you're not in bad shape at all there, especially if Kennedy is closer to 2016 than 2017. Kennedy. They also have Willie Peralta, who was their other big free agent signing back in the long lost days of November, forever ago, who I don't know. I think he'll start some games. I don't think he'll end up in the rotation right away, but I think he'll start some games as guys get hurt, get skipped, whatever. So he's kind of also in that kind of locked range. Out of those guys, Carnes does have an option left. I think Brandon Maurer does also, but they're also, you know, players that I just can't see them getting sent down if they're pitching even halfway decently. But yeah, the bullpen kind of shakes out interestingly, and I'm glad you brought up the Rule 5 guys because that is a big wrinkle because, like you said, they have to return those guys if they don't stay on the 25-man roster. So it's almost like when they got both of those, they did so knowing that they probably would only get one, and they're just kind of hedging their bets. You can always still work out some kind of a deal. So like if Brad Keller just doesn't work out, they don't have a spot for him, they can offer him back. And if there is a deal that they can work out so that they can trade and keep him on the team, okay, that's possible. But you know, I think if they didn't find a spot in the first place, then, you know, maybe they just move on. But, you know, Birch Smith pitched pretty well in his first outing, at least according to the radio broadcast. Didn't get to see it. I think he's starting tomorrow, or at least when people are listening, that would be March 1st on Thursday. So today, or if maybe he's already pitched. I don't know. I don't know when you're listening to this. So that could be interesting to see how he does. And I think he's probably most likely to stick. You know, he's just had a lot of injuries and that's what led to him being available in the Rule 5. But then you kind of get, this is where options really come into play because the Royals went out and they picked up Trevor Oakes. Last year they claimed Sam Gavilio. They signed, Scott Barlow earlier in the off season. And a lot of those guys, you know, have a decent shot at getting major league innings. But to start the year, guys like, you know, Willie Peralta, like Brian Flynn, like Jesse Hahn, those guys are out of options. So that comes back to that decision where you have to decide, are they on your major league team or do you potentially lose them to another team? And I don't think there's anybody's going to lose sleep if they lose any of those players, but if it comes down to Trevor Oakes is pitching well and maybe even a little bit better than Jesse Hahn, Jesse Hahn still has the inner route to that job because he's out of options and because the Royals can send Trevor Oakes to Omaha and, you know, have him ready when they need him later. Same with Barlow. You know, it just puts them in a position there. Kevin McCarthy, he might run into this too because he's a guy who pitched well last year and I think will probably have a good shot at a regular bullpen job this year. But he does have two options left. And so if it comes down to a decision between him and somebody who does not have options, well, that kind of makes the decision for him. So they kind of have to keep that in mind as they evaluate some of these. And so a lot of those guys, it's either all or nothing, really, with pitchers. Scott Barlow has three options left. Heath Fillmyer was just added last November by the A's before they traded him, so he's got three options left. Tim Hill was added by the Royals to the 40-man roster, so he's got three options left. Andre Machado, three options left. Trevor Oakes, three options left. Eric Skoglund, two options left. You know, a lot of guys have options, but a lot of those other guys, you know, they're pretty much out. And so that gives them a better shot of actually keeping a job when it comes down to it. So I really think that guys like Flynn, like Hahn, one of the Rule 5 guys, are pretty strong to make the roster as long as they don't pitch poorly. Just because that roster math comes into play. And if you can keep every player you have right now, well, you end up in a spot where you might as well keep them rather than, well, let's see if we can sneak Flynn through waivers. You know, tall lefty who's pitched well when he's been healthy, someone would take a chance on him. So you want to try to keep him in your organization as best you can. And so if that means that Tim Hill, who might be pitching great, gets sent to Omaha, well, that's why they have the option years. So, you know, that's what it kind of comes down to for a lot of those guys. So it's going to be interesting to see how that turns out. I think any of those guys are probably going to see some action this year. You know, pitchers, injuries, they always happen. There's always a stretch that teams run into where they get the bullpen overtaxed or they have a couple of extra inning games and they just need fresh arms. And so you start calling guys up and down and whatnot. So I think you'll see most of those guys, you know, the fluidity of the roster, as we mentioned earlier, just kind of lends itself to that. But to start the year, at least, a lot of those guys probably feel pretty comfortable unless they just come out and tank and just really suck on the mound. Peralta was roughed up in his first start, but I think he's probably the safest. Hahn was kind of okay. Flynn has been, you know, I think he's made it into one game. So there's not a lot to go off of today. But by the end of spring, I think you'll see most of these guys down to the last day of camp. And then the Royals have their decision to make. And the options are definitely going to come into play.
Yeah. And, you know, that's something that the Royals, they seem to always be very keenly aware of, and they should be, you know, specifically mm-hmm. when you are, and you see it a lot with the smaller market teams, you know, there is you kind of have to really try and maximize as much of the options and the service time and everything as you can, as much as it sucks as fans to think that we possibly could miss 2 months of a player at the major league level because the team is trying to work out the service time thing. You know, it is something that definitely needs to be considered. So, you know, the options and the service time and everything for all these players, it most certainly will come into play, and it'll be interesting to see how the Royals kind of balance all of it. And you'll really get a feel for kind of what the Royals think about any of these players because, you know, who they really try and kind of wait on and who they don't even, you know, they'll, they, hmm, it might be a little bit, they might wait a little bit longer on people that they're not quite sure about. And the guys that they really like and that they're high on, they might give the chance from opening day. Who knows? So it'll be kind of interesting. And it'll also be a key into where do the Royals think that they are and where do they think that they're going? Because if they try and manage service time a lot, then, you know, none of us – I don't think there's too many people that really think the Royals are going to be super competitive this year. I shouldn't say that, or super, super good this year, but that, you know, maybe –
I think you had it right the first time.
If they play their cards right. Yeah. But, you know, if the Royals themselves think that way, then gaming the service time becomes a lot more important. Taking all those things into account becomes a lot more important. But if the Royals think that, hey, for some reason they think maybe we can compete this year, you know, then maybe they won't waste any time if these players are have a good spring. And they'll just let them start right away and, you know, knowing, hey, if we want to make a run at this thing at all, we have to get off to a hot start. So we need all the help we can get or whatever. You know, it's certainly possible that they feel that way. I don't know that that would be responsible of them to feel that way. But, you know, it's sometimes you kind of have to do things like that, I guess, if you're running a baseball team. So I don't know. We'll see. But it will, in a weird way, you know, it feels kind of back to the, you know, before the most recent run where everything was so up in the air and we didn't really know, but, you know, who was going to play and who was going to do what. But back then, it wasn't all that exciting because it was just kind of, well, you know, just a bunch of players that aren't really going to matter doing things that aren't going to matter, and that's it. But now
we call
feels,
that the Rick Ankiel years. Again.
Yes, exactly. But we've seen it happen. We know it can happen. We know how it happens. So it's a little bit exciting saying, okay, we've got all these players. We know the Royals aren't going to be particularly good necessarily, but they've got a lot of draft picks coming up. They had a pretty solid draft last year. They can really overhaul this farm system and really make things improve going forward, maybe make gear up for another run here in a couple of years. So who on today's current roster, who on the 2018 team is going to be in that future, is going to be a piece of that next team to get back to the playoffs with the Royals and hopefully, who knows, bring another World Series back to this town. You know, that'll be kind of exciting because if we're to assume that the Royals can do it all again and whether they win a World Series, you know, who knows, that's incredibly difficult, but, you know, getting back to the playoffs and doing that sort of a thing, if we think the Royals can get back to that place, how they do it and who helps them get there is going to be really interesting. And somebody on this, you know, there will be people on this team that will definitely could do that. And at the same time, there could also be a player like Danny Duffy, who, you know, the Royals have him for 4 more years on his current contract at a very good price. But if he does really well and the Royals do not, then he could net himself or net the Royals a pretty big return in the trade market come midseason at the trade deadline. So, you know, that's another kind of wrinkle in all this. So if you have young players and they get up and play well, you know, you can talk about service time and all that, but you can also talk about what they can get you in return to help try and build back up towards that future. You know, and it's kind of the reverse of where the Royals were in 2012, where they had prospects. They knew they wanted to win now, so they traded prospects for James Shields and Wade Davis, and they made that trade because they knew they had to make an on the field trade to help them win those games, and it paid off. And then you've got now kind of the opposite, where you say, okay, maybe we can't win on the field, so if we have someone like Danny Duffy who can get us a big return, you know, maybe we trade him and we get some really good prospects that might take another couple of years to really develop, but once they do, the Royals will be in a better position. You know, there's all these things to balance out in terms of where the Royals go, and it's going to be important for them to really kind of decide what they want to do. Because I think right now, you know, I think we've expressed some concern and some slight confusion, and I think many others have as well, about what exactly the Royals are trying to accomplish this season and where they think they are. Because you have, you know, sometimes you just need to fill out a roster. So signing like a Willie Peralta or something is just kind of whatever. But, you know, and maybe that's what it was, but it also kind of feels like the Royals, you know, signing Lucas Duda and some, you know, okay, maybe we can cobble together a team that can be competitive and maybe squeak into a wild card spot if things kind of go our way. You know, that seems pretty far-fetched for me, but, you know, maybe that's what the way the Royals are thinking. And if that's the way that they are thinking, then that might prevent them from making smart decisions that could help the team to a greater effect in the long run. So who knows? You know, it'll be kind of interesting to see if they are in that position where, whether it's Danny Duffy or anybody else, who they can trade and really get themselves set up for an even brighter future, you know, if they will make that trade or if they will hold off, you know, thinking maybe they're closer than the rest of us do, or how that all kind of goes. It'd be interesting to get some more concrete ideas of where the Royals think they are and where they're headed and how soon they think they can get there.
Yeah, I think, you know, especially with like guys like Duffy and even like Whit Merrifield has come up in a lot of trade talks, you know, they're at a point where, you know, if they feel like the next big team that has a chance to make it is like 3 years away, they might hold on to those guys. Like, I'm pretty sure they're realistic enough about where things are that a ton of things that would have to go right. A lot of guys would have to have career years to even have like a decent offense and a decent team. And so they're not going to outright come out and say that they're tanking. You know, they still want to be competitive. Mm-hmm. But you also kind of, you know, you look at it like Duda, if he's got like 20 home runs at the All-Star break, well, by the end of July, that's a pretty good trade chip. You might not get, you know, someone's number 5 prospect, but you might get their number 20. And those guys can turn into something. And it's at least, it's another option. It's another potential player that could develop into something in your system. And, you know, we saw that a bit in like 2010 and whatnot, where when they had, you know, Rick Ankiel and Kyle Farnsworth, they traded him to the Braves. They got Tim Collins back. They got Gregor Blanco back. They got Jesse Chavez back. You know, all three of those guys put in decent time in the major leagues. And Blanco at a time was a pretty decent underrated center fielder. Chavez had a couple good years with the A's, and Collins was effective enough for the Royals out of the bullpen. Just by trading a couple of, you know, veteran guys that had pretty decent years. So it might turn into something like that where they're selling these spare parts that they only have 1 year deals. So, I mean, it's not like they're, you know, Lucas Duda is not on the next Royals playoff team. You know, you don't even need to worry about that. You get through this year, you give an opportunity for Dozier to season in the minors, or another year for Nick Prado to come up. You know, and that's all you're really worried about is those are the first basemen on the next playoff team, not Lucas Duda. So if you can trade him for anything that has any value, you're in a good spot. If it turns out that Danny Duffy can bring back the kind of deal that the White Sox got for like Jose Quintana, well, then you probably have to pull the trigger if you can get, you know, two like top 10 prospects from a good farm system. You know, otherwise, I think they might be inclined to hold on to him. They might also be inclined to hold on to some of those guys out of sentiment. You know, Dayton Moore's not, you know, he's probably ruled with his heart a little more than his head sometimes. Alex Gordon's contract, probably evidence of that, even though everybody liked it at the time. The pursuit of Eric Hosmer is kind of points to that. So maybe he makes decisions like that. Clint Scholes, I think, has brought up, you know, just in talking with us on Slack and whatnot about, like, Dayton Moore being a scout guy is going to be a little more, you know, compelled to compete and find a team and put, like, real players on it rather than to go that tanking route that maybe your more business analytical types might go with if that's your general manager. So that's another factor. So it might be something where if he's staring at a 100-loss team, he might not trade somebody just because he doesn't want to have to wear that, even if it's maybe the big picture best idea. So I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of different things that can happen in this offseason or, you know, the rest of spring training and you know, throughout this season. And, you know, maybe that in 5 years, those decisions bear fruit and maybe. So they've got a lot of decisions to make right now in spring training and as the season goes on. We'll see how they turn out by the end of the year and by the end of March and how it all turns out for the Royals in 2018, 2019, 2020, et cetera, et cetera.
Absolutely. And, you know, with all this stuff talking, we haven't even really discussed the non-roster invitees in spring training. So, I mean, you want to give a rundown of who those are and kind of some of your thoughts?
Yeah, just real quick, because I don't know if a lot of these guys are going to make the team. But, I mean, you got like Ryan Goins is getting some playing time. He can play a lot of infield spots. If something happens to Ramon Torres, maybe he's your utility guy. Brian O'Hurd and Frank Schwindel are both there. It seems like with Duda signing, those guys are probably still going to end up in Omaha. Maybe Dozier's in the outfield in Omaha, and those guys switch out first base and DH. You know, we'll see how that works out. But, you know, if they have good springs, it might make the decision more difficult. Tyler Collins is a non-roster outfielder that the Royals have in camp. Ned Yost seems to like him. He's kind of got that gritty thing to him, so you know how that turns out sometimes. The Royals signed Michael Saunders to a minor league deal. He's had some good years. You know, was an all-star in 2016. Lefty bat. Can't really play anything but a corner position, so don't know what he's going to do. And then you have guys like, you know, Glenn Sparkman, who was, you know, made it into the majors last year. He's in camp. Richard Lovelady is out there. He's a potential guy that I don't think he's made it into a game yet. So maybe that points to where he's at in the Royals' plans for this year. Blaine Boyer was signed. They could definitely sign other arms. Seth Maness was on last year's team. He's in camp also as a non-roster invitee. So they've got a few guys who, you know, might pop up on the 40-man roster by the time spring training is up. That does mean that someone would have to go. And you know, we also didn't mention Billy Burns was designated for assignment to make room for Lucas Duda. So, you know, there's another casualty. Burns was out of options. So they had to make the decision, and they opted to make him available to other teams. So we'll see if he slips through. He might end up being somebody who stays in camp if he clears waivers. So that's something else to watch out to. But unlike most years, it seems like the guys that they have in place on the 40-man already are probably guys who they take to Kansas City, whereas usually you have one or two decisions where you have to clear someone off your 40-man roster for, like, you know, Peter Moylan is a guy the last couple of years they've added that way. I think Ryan Madsen was a minor league signee that they had to add. You know, those guys pop up. Chengming Huang back in the day.
Of course, yes.
Where, you know,
could we forget?
They play well enough in spring and ends up, you know, they end up winning a spot, but it's at the, you know, at the expense of somebody else who's already on the 40-man roster. There's also, you know, injuries can clear spots. So I would kind of keep an eye on those guys, but I wouldn't really expect them to do much this year. But you never know. I mean, circumstances certainly change. So they're at least worth kind of keeping an eye on as the next month proceeds.
Indeed. And I think that kind of concludes the and a roster discussion we'll have. Just a couple final notes before we go. Something of note, we found out today that Rustin Dodd, who's been the beat reporter for the Royals ever since Andy McCullough left to go cover the Dodgers, he is now leaving, and he will actually be going – I believe he's going to The Athletic, right?
It's a rumor. I don't know if it's been announced, but okay. That's – I'd seen – for someone who's been at the same paper from the area, who was seemingly in a stable job for this industry, that seems like the only reason those guys are leaving is to go to The Athletic, who they've signed like everybody. So
yeah, so just speculation at this point, but a lot of speculation.
Yeah, feels pretty good there that's
yes.
The thing.
And taking his place at the Kansas City Star will be Maria Torres, who actually has been doing a really good job covering the Latin American system for the Royals, and now she'll be the full-time beat reporter. So congratulations to her on the new gig. And if you want to get your daily dose of Royals, be sure to follow her on Twitter. Unfortunately, I just started following her myself, so unfortunately I don't know her Twitter handle off the top of my head. Do you have it with you?
I or do.
At easy access.
It is Maria_Torres3. So MARIA underscore TORRES and the number 3.
There you go. So definitely follow her. She's been a great follow so far, and it's always good to follow the Royals beat reporter. Get that daily dose of Royals that you want when you're looking for those lonely times to fill in your Royals knowledge in between listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow her and get all that you need. So with that, I think we'll end the show this week. Thank you all so much for listening. Be sure to visit our sponsors. We actually, Kelly's Westport Inn, we're actually going to have a get-together spring training. We do it every year. We try and have at least one spring training game where we get everyone out there and have a few drinks, watch some Royal spring training baseball where it's, you know, a little less stressed than your typical game during the year or playoff game or anything like that. So don't have to worry about that this year, I don't think.
So
it'll be
worries.
March. It'll be March 11th, which is a Saturday, right?
It's a Sunday. It's a 3 p.m. Sunday, game. So there's
– I think on the weekend.
Yeah, I think the Royals TV schedule is really weird, and there are a couple of games that are aired on the 17th and the 18th, but Kelly's Westport Inn is an Irish bar, and that's St. Patrick's Day weekend. And
yes,
they specifically have requested us to avoid those dates because while they are superhuman and great at taking care of their customers, that's a big weekend. So we're not gonna hoist a bunch of Royals fans on them on top of it. So the 11th they'll be playing Cleveland. 3 p.m. start. I think it's just after daylight savings, maybe the week after. I don't know.
Yeah.
3 p.m. start at any rate. So, you know, good chance to get out there. Hopefully the weather's nice and, you know, you can check out the rooftop, which is really cool. We'll be convening there and hanging out, and there's always pizza and there's beer and there's, you know, a lot of fun. So should be cool.
Always a good time. So Kelly's Westport Inn, March 11th, 3 p.m. Be there. Meet all of us. Have fun. It'll be good times as it always is. And in the meantime, when you're looking for more of that sweet, sweet Royals knowledge, be sure to go to BP Kansas City. We've got, as always, a plethora of content out there. We've got Clint Scholes continues his kind of looking at the never too early to discuss the draft articles. So, you know, nobody we've talked about it before. I don't know if there's anybody that covers a local team that is, you know, not doesn't write for a newspaper or anything like that, that knows the farms, their that respective team's farm system better than Clint does the Royals. And he's also got one just talking about kind of some of the topics that we discussed in the show today about how the Royals are using 2018 as a year to kind of decide what they're doing, where they're going, how they're going to get there, et cetera, et cetera. And we've got another article about Craig Brown trying to find a balance for that similar thing. We're talking about prospects and players on the team and all that kind of stuff. So definitely head on over there, read the fine content we're putting out daily at bpkansascity.com. Go to Kelly's. Hope to see you all on the 11th. We'll have another show in between then, so we'll get to two more shows in between now and then, so we'll be able to remind you a couple more times about that, but we hope to see you all out there. Put it in the calendar now, and we'll see you all there, and then maybe a week later at St. Paddy's Day as well. Who knows? But until then, just enjoy it, folks. The weather's starting to get nicer. We got the Royals and all of Major Leagues playing actual, real, tangible baseball. Things are going to start coming into focus. We're going to start getting things narrowed down closer and closer to those final 25 men who will be on that roster opening day, and then opening day will be here before you know it, and it'll be Rose baseball again, and it'll be summer, and the weather will be nice, and everything will be great and wonderful in the world. Well, maybe it'll just be nice weather with baseball. Who knows? But anyway, we'll be back next week, and we'll have more to discuss then as we continue to get more information about, or just more ideas of how the Royals roster is shaping up and who's playing well. We'll have a lot more games under our belt, or the Royals will have a lot more games under their belts that we can discuss to see who's showing up and who's maybe struggling a little bit, and what that means for this roster. So be sure to come back next week. Until then, thank you all so much for stopping by. We'll see you next time. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at BProKansasCity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com.
Hey, Troy, what are you doing this weekend?
I'm going to grab a beer somewhere. What do you have in mind?
I heard about this awesome new bar downtown. It's called Rage. The waitresses have a contest to see who has the most piercing.
No, man, that's not really my scene.
Well, there's another bar close by called Spit Cup. Check it out. The bartenders wear chaps, and every hour they shoot a guy.
No, seriously, I just want a bar where I can sit down and watch the game.
Okay, I've got just the place. It's called Lilac. You sit on pillows, drink from eucalyptus leaves.
No, Ned, but I just want a place where I can get a cheap drink and watch the football game.
Okay, I got it. This place, it's got a TV. It's called 816. All their drinks come in NBA hats.
Man, I just want a place like Kelly's.
Oh, you mean Kelly's Westport Inn? No, they've got all the basketball and bowl games. They've even got a heated roof. The view is really nice, too, if you know what I'm saying. Why didn't you just say you wanted to go to Kelly's?
Kelly's Westport Inn, 500 Westport Road. Make it your place to go any time of the week.